Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
On today's Caped Wonder Superman podcast, we are going one-on-one with one of the great 80s villains of the decade. His only mission, destroy Superman.
Nuclear Man himself, Mark Pillow, is our guest, and we're jumping back into the fan fascination of Superman 4, The Quest for Peace.
Now, the Caped Wonder Superman podcast with Jay Towers and Jim Bowers on iHeartRadio.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the Caped Wonder Superman podcast, episode 34. We are excited to have you here, as always, in Detroit, Michigan. I'm Jay Towers, and off to Las Vegas we go. There's our friend Jim Bowers. Jim, hello to you.
Hello, Jay. Hello, everybody. You know what, Jay? I'm in the mood to get nuclear. How about you?
That's usually something no one wants to get, but for this we do, for sure. We have a big, big podcast plan. We have some special guests joining us as well, and we can't wait to get right into it. Before we do, it was a monumental week for a couple reasons. One, CapeWonder.com celebrating 19 years online. The place for all of us to go and reminisce and reflect. And Jim, you've done an amazing job with this website for 19 years.
Thank you, sir. It's been a whole lot of fun. And I've been going back through my archives and looking at the early pictures and graphics that I made back in 2002, the humble beginnings. And that very first picture I ever posted, Jay, was the one of Superman looking up once he drilled through the streets of Metropolis before the bullets started bouncing off his chest. And I've always loved that picture. And just going back to the archives has been a real ride for me. But thank you to everyone who supported Caped Wonder for, 19 years. So next year, what are we going to do for the 20th?
19 years for CapedWonder.com. We certainly we celebrate every day. If you've always wanted a personalized Nuclear Man autograph from Mr. Mark Pillow himself, we have a special announcement coming up at the end of the podcast with Mark. We'll tell you all about it, but it's really something exclusive to CapeWonder.com and something to our podcast that you guys are going to be really, really excited about. We also have two special guests with us today, kind of a super fan roundtable with two great Superman 4 historians, everything from film, costumes, photographs, and of course, Martin Lakin and Alexi Lambley Steele will be joining us during the podcast as well. Without further ado, it came out in 1987. It's one of our favorites. No matter what age you saw Superman 4, it's a movie you'll never forget. And Nuclear Man, Jim, one of our favorite characters in the Superman franchise.
Yes, he is. Nuclear Man himself, Mark Pillow, and he is with us today. And what a great guy. He's got some fantastic stories. I went back and watched the movie again last night and just had a blast.
Mark Pillow, let's connect to him right now.
Hi, how are you? Good to be here.
Great to have you with us, Mark. And you're in Texas, is that right?
I'm in the Houston area right now. I lived about 30 miles north or so in the Woodlands.
We're so excited that you're with us. I know a lot of people have been looking forward to having you join us, the insiders that we've told anyway. I think the audience is going to be rather surprised and very happy when they listen to this podcast soon.
Take us back. Take us back to 1986. Sidney J. Fury. He's going to, you know, take on Superman 4. We know much of the original cast was coming back together. How did it happen? How did you get the call? And take us kind of through some of that.
I first met Sidney's son, I believe, is how it all kind of began. And I had heard that they were doing a bit of a search. And I was in Denver in the time, and I didn't know anything about this thing. And all of a sudden, they come in to visit, and just friends of mine say, hey, your agent's been trying to get in touch with you. And I call him, says, Mark, tomorrow on a plane back to LA. So I headed back, rented a car at LAX, drove up somewhere in Hollywood, I can't remember anymore, walked in the room, and I might be making this up, but I'm pretty sure Sidney went, that's the guy. I don't know, it was the look he was looking for, whatever it was. We had a brief talk. He said, can you come back and meet me at lunch? And it was about, I think I had about 3 hours. And I remember getting in my car and driving down Sunset to the beach, like in the days, and turning around and coming back up, just trying to kill time. That was how we had our meeting over lunch. And then within 4 or 5 days, I'm in London, out at Elstree Studios, meeting Gene, getting fitting. And I remember I was at the Dorchester Hotel, like the second night, still jet lagged. And I'm sitting on the end of my bed going, what just happened? What am I making all this up? So that was kind of the beginning of it all.
What did you know about Nuclear Man? Because it wasn't a character that was, you know, in the comics a whole lot. And we knew it was something new. Here you are. You got it so fast. What were you told about the part? How was it described to you?
I'm trying to think if anything was actually said to me at all. It just this. I didn't know anything about the story. I hadn't been part of the search. None of my friends. I had friends that had been in for the role, but I hadn't spoken to any of them.
Right.
So I think the first time I really got an understanding, Sydney gave me maybe a quick overview, but actually when they handed me the script to have a look at it, read it through, I think I just sat and just went right through it and got my first real inkling of what the character was about.
Well, you must have been blown away by the fact that you were going to have all of Superman's powers and more, actually.
Yes.
And that you were going to have so many great scenes with Christopher Reeve. And of course, all of the physical challenges you were going to go through with wire flying and visual effects. So I don't know if you'd ever been involved in visual effects to that extent before. I mean, you were flying and spent a lot of time, I know, hanging on wires.
I did. Thankfully, by that time, I think I already had 200 skydives. So I was used to being under a parachute. I was a hang glider pilot also. So some part of the sense of being suspended in the air felt quite natural, actually. And then working with, I believe his name was Bob, was doing the flying of us. He was very patient. I was amazed at how technical it was, or how to make it look effortless, how much of a challenge that was. And Chris just had it down. He could just step out of it like he just was landing and stepping into it. And it took quite a while to learn how to do that part of the actual character.
Well, he was very much involved in working directly with Bob Harmon in the previous films and had certain things that he wanted to perfect. And I'm sure he helped you with that. But I'm intrigued by your skydiving experience because I was an Army paratrooper at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. And I read that you were a skydiver, I thought, okay, well, he's had that same thrill and there's nothing like it, as you know.
I remember selling my equipment. I think I had 311 jumps, but I'm a big fan of special operations and all those guys. And the SEALs would come out in the desert or the SAS would come over from England and we'd work with, you know, they'd play too. So I'm always been great admirer of what they do and love being in the sky. I don't know what it is about actors. You look at them, a lot of them are pilots. There's something about flying, skydiving, hang gliding, scuba diving. It all feels like flying. There's something about that just really equates with acting somehow, just being free and being out there and being open to what all the possibilities are.
October 17th, 1986, Nuclear Man's arrival sequence on stage six at Elstree Studios filmed. You're on the set with Gene Hackman and John Cryer. At the end of the day, Hackman invites all the members of the cast and crew to join him for a drink on stage nine. Do you remember that?
I don't, and possibly I had a bit more than I should have, maybe that's why, and had to be carried out and taken home. But wow, what a memory.
You've spoken about Gene before as really being a great mentor too for this film.
He was, and just sitting with him at lunch, you don't have to say anything, just let it just turn him on and let him tell stories. My gosh, the guy's unbelievable. But it was so much about him that was very helpful on this film, but this was just the beginning for me, but then working in Europe and in Russia later on, of that he would show up early and walk it. You know, before there was crew, before there was anybody walking the set, watching the professionalism of an ex-Marine, having that discipline. So listening to him speak about it and the challenges he'd been through to get to the point that he was at, he was marvelous. Yeah, he is marvelous.
I think he loved to pull pranks or tease Chris Reeve. I know in the first movie he had that foot locker nailed down that had the kryptonite in it and pulled all these little tricks on Chris. Did he do any of that on four? Was he having a good time?
I'm trying to, you know, he called me, like, he had these nicknames like Nuke Baby or things like that. He was great. And of course there was Soup Baby for Superman.
Right.
But he seemed like he just was genuinely enjoying himself and just incredibly good at what he does, just born to be in front of a camera. So to sit back and watch him work, watch Chris work, watch any of them work, was just a master class in watching film acting.
November of 1986, you also shot the scenes on the moon. Am I right that Chris directed some of those scenes? Was he a part of that? And can you talk a little bit about the filming on the moon?
Yes, he actually, as far as I can remember, he basically shot all of the moon sequences. So he covered everything. So he was very, very thorough. So we would shoot it multiple times. We'd change angles. He really was thinking about what he wanted.
Very much
in charge. I think he felt pretty comfortable in that position. I think I can certainly have seen him, bless his heart, you know, doing more directing later on. But yes, moon sequence, I believe, was all him.
I think he probably took an interest in that back when he was a theater actor. He's just always been interested in every aspect of filmmaking. So the moon sequence, I don't know about you, Jay, but the moon sequence is perhaps my favorite part of the whole movie.
When you take yourself back to that time, we know now that obviously the budget for that film was cut. And years later, you find out, wow, it was supposed to be this much money to make it. And it was only this much. But how much of that were you exposed to at the time?
None of it. I had no idea.
Yeah.
They pretty much kept it to themselves. When I came to work, it was just to do the very best I could that day. And I didn't sense from Chris that I'm sure he was very upset and disappointed by things. It seems like I saw less of Sydney at a certain point. And I was only putting two and two together later on, thinking that possibly he was disappointed by the way things were going. But I didn't have any sense of it myself while I was there.
Well, Chris told me in 94 that, of course, felt a great sense of commitment. He, you know, when he committed to something, he gave 100% no matter what. And he definitely didn't want to walk or create any major problems because he was concerned about putting so many people out of work, too. I'm not surprised that you didn't know because I guess just a handful of people did.
I mean, I was thinking the same thing because when on the moon, I broke my foot on one of the stunts. And I had to cut the boot off my foot every time at the end of the day because it was so swollen. But again, that same mindset, we just need to keep going.
Yeah.
And I think they were grateful for that. They didn't say, oh God, we got to find somebody to do it, to stand in for him or we'll do something. So we just worked around it. There's times you'll see me jumping toward Chris and I'm holding my right leg up in the air bent. And that's because I can't land on that foot. So we just made it work. But my sense, again, of going back to that, the budget being cut, I had no sense of that until probably years later.
Yeah,
hearing about it.
Well, there are many scenes still yet to be officially released by Warner Brothers that feature you. And I was going back and looking at the Blu-ray last night and all those deleted scenes that are included on it. And there's some great stuff there. And Warner Archive told me not long ago, Mark, that they do indeed have the 134-minute edit of the movie that was shown once during a test screening in L.A. Mm-hmm. And that since that news has come out, the fans have been so excited because they've wanted to see the original vision of the film. And again, that includes a lot of you and, of course, the first nuclear man, Clive Mantle. So we hope that one day the entire film will get out there because I know it's been requested for a long, long time. Quite a lot of fans didn't even know if it still existed, but it does.
And what are the possibilities of using all the technology at our fingertips now to enhance all these scenes? I kept thinking a graduate student at USC film school would work on it or do it something like that, because using everything now with the technology available to clean it up would be, I'd love to see it. I think about the cost of these types of things. So possibly again, using it as a study for someone in film, or if Warner Brothers wanted to put any money toward it, but I would love to see what they could do. And I would thoroughly enjoy seeing Clive. I so missed seeing him in that role. I think it would be absolutely wonderful to have him, the full version as it was perceived from the beginning.
Right. And, you know, it was cut down to 89 minutes from the 134. And there's some great stuff in the deleted scenes. Now, we haven't seen everything. And I think if they could go back and get the elements, you know, the blue screen flying and all of that, they can do all these new composites digitally now. And I think it'd be a whole new experience. In 2011, they did do quite a few or spent quite a bit of money on cleaning up the movie, the opticals, getting rid of dirt and that sort of thing. But it's in the vaults. Why not do something with it?
Well, you read the script originally, the full script. It's a great story.
Yeah.
The greatest hope against the threat of nuclear war is Superman.
I'm going to do what our governments have been unwilling or unable to do. Effective immediately, I'm going to rid our planet of all nuclear weapons.
The greatest threat to Superman is Lex Luthor.
Smarter than I thought. We can make the world safe for war profits.
He's created the ultimate weapon to annihilate the Man of Steel.
You'd risk worldwide nuclear war for your own personal financial gain.
Nobody wants war. I just want to keep the threat alive.
Dude of Steel, where are you gonna get it?
You know you're a workaholic. Why don't you stop and smell the roses, huh?
Superman 4, Christopher Reeve, Gene Hackman, Jackie Cooper, John Cryer, with Mariel Hemingway and Margot Kidder as Lois Lane. Superman 4, his most important adventure, the quest for peace.
I would love to see it the way it was written. Absolutely. I like the premise, the political side of it, mm-hmm. Nuclear arms race. I love all that. So to put it all together, if I was asked in any way to help on anything, I'd be just, please, just ask. Yeah. I would love to be part of anything in any way that I could help.
There are kids that grew up and their first Superman experience was Superman 4. They don't know of anything to do with a budget or what was cut or what wasn't in the film or what. They just know that was their favorite Superman. Nuclear Man was their favorite villain. Those are the people we talk to so much that we're so excited to have you on.
And there are some fans out there now, Mark, that are actually doing some of that. They're cleaning up some of the scenes and some of the wires and the color correcting. We know one gentleman has been working on it for a while, and I think when the entire film gets released, he's just going to go all the way with it. But it reignites everyone's enthusiasm for this movie when we see these talented folks doing all this on their own time just because they love the film. And, you know, it's very gratifying to see when someone's contributing to keeping all of these alive, you know, in the forefront of everyone's minds. And it is. Jay and I are constantly talking about the wonderful nostalgia associated with this series.
Mark, talk a little bit about the costume. Well, a couple of us were lucky enough to get some of your costumes that have come up at auction over the years. And luckily, those little beads on them make them kind of easy to identify where they were in the movie. There's a great scene where you follow Chris into a building and he goes into the elevator and you follow him in there. But that scene is the that's this costume of yours that I have. How many costumes did you have? Tell me about the fitting and all that.
Well, did you guys know that the original Nuclear Man costume looked nothing like that?
No.
And I'm trying to remember because I only saw it a couple of times, but I think it was basically just all gold with a star on it. And I came in and I saw it and I thought, well, this doesn't look, I mean, I don't think I was negative about it to the gentleman that had designed it, but I gave him some ideas. So again, he took what I said and ran with it. But the costume in many ways was me changing things up. I don't think that the original was sleeveless. I think it had, because I think the gauntlets are all new. All that was new. So it was a very different costume. It looks like it's a one piece, which kind of looks more like the newest Superman outfits, kind of move back in that kind of where it looks like it all just blends together.
Right.
But I certainly remember all the different clothes. I remember in the beginning, I was fitted for contacts. That a lot of the things were, I was going to have to be special contacts and we never used them. All the molds for the body. I mean, there's a lot that goes into preparing harnesses for flying and things like that, the whole preparation for it. I mean, I love the way it looks. I really do. I think it's an incredible outfit. I don't have one. it would be baggy in all the wrong places and it would be tight in all the wrong places. So I would attempt to put it on, but it's a great costume.
It really is. That gold has a really unique sheen to it. And the embroidered work on the cape is great. I love when you put the cape over your head and you're hiding, and then you reveal yourself to the world. It almost has kind of a Dracula sort of feel to it when you reveal yourself.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I don't know how hot that thing was, but I know Chris talked about constantly sweating under the armpits, and they had to take blow dryers and dry them. And
yes, well, I perspire also, and it's, and especially that opening scene where I get that light behind me was hot.
Yeah.
So we had fans on us and trying to cool down and backing off, and again constantly having to dry off. And you'd see sweat. I mean, of course, we can't be perspiring as superheroes. And I know that Chris, actually, as much as I did, had a problem. I was probably a little bit cooler than him because I had my arms were exposed. Mm-hmm. But they could be quite warm, I must say, those outfits. And the state, and being on a stage, soundstage, you know, as you know, with all the lighting, it can get quite warm.
Well, Mark, I'll tell you what, with a zero interest balance transfer, and I've done about four of them, you too can have a Nuclear Man costume.
I was actually thinking about the boots, the weighted boots. I was thinking about that when I'm actually walking on that, and I kept wondering if those are out there with that kind of heated metal thing underneath.
Let's bring the guys in, because you know what? I mean, these guys, Jim and I are such fans. These guys can talk this all day, but Martin and Alexi, why don't you guys join in and join our conversation with Mark Pillow on the Cape Wonder Superman podcast. And there they are over in the UK. So it is late at night for them.
Well, good evening. It wouldn't matter what time it was. If it'd be 3 o'clock in the morning, I wouldn't have missed this for the world. What an amazing opportunity, Mark. So pleased to meet you. So I'm not sure exactly how much you're aware of. I mean, I'm sure that you know there's an outpouring of affection for this film and your part in it. As Jay was saying, it resonates so much even after all this time. I mean, I was 13 when I went to see it, and obviously it just made a huge impression on me. But my understanding is that you were born in England, isn't that right, Mark?
I was. I'm in Leeds. I'm a Yorkshireman.
So do you consider yourself to be English, or do you consider yourself to be American? Or
I feel very English, I must say.
You do?
I do. I guess I'm just so proud of the whole English thing. I don't know. And I love being American too. My dad's a Texan. My gosh, you better be proud of it. Well, he was a Texan, but like eight generations of Texans. So he was Texan. There was no doubt about it.
Yeah. Let's meet Alexi too. Alexi, why don't you say hi to Mark and tell him a little bit about you?
Hi, Mark. Alexi. Absolute pleasure to speak to you and actually hear your voice.
Ah, thank you.
Yeah, massive, massive fan. I think my first memories of seeing Superman 4 when I was potentially, 11, 12 years of age. So it stuck with me for a very long time. And obviously had the opportunity to purchase a Nuclear Man costume last year.
It.
That's a flying costume, isn't it, Alexi?
It is. It is. It's totally the flying costume. At the back, it's there's a number of pieces of Velcro and all sorts of stuff going on at the back.
Yeah.
Do you remember what any of this was? I mean, this was supposed to be for the flying rig that must have been.
Yes, packed. The rig went through. I had a just a fitted harness underneath, and that's where you clipped it through those holes in the back.
I mean, the condition of it, you wouldn't think that it's 30 years old, honestly. Yes. It's kept up remarkably.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing to think how the time has gone. I'll be 62 in a couple of weeks.
Wow. Let's talk a little bit. And Martin, I think you wanted to bring it up too, but just about the royal premiere, right? And kind of that experience a little bit.
I did. Yes. Speaking about being back in London. So quite famously, recently photographs have surfaced of you attending the royal premiere in London, and you were in costume, which is pretty unprecedented even for the time. How did that feel? And was the original arrangement that both you and Chris were to attend together? And that was the first time that anybody had laid eyes on Nuclear Man. So that must have been a thrill, or terrible, depending on your point.
My gosh. Because I think the first thoughts were to have Chris actually fly into Leicester Square.
No.
And then I had that was the idea that he said, no, I declined. And I had a tuxedo. That was the original way I was going to go to the premiere, not wearing spandex sitting next to the future Queen of England. but I have to say that pulling in, and they brought my grandparents down from Leeds, and we're in the car. I don't know how many people were in Leicester Square, but there was a lot of people. And they when they came up to the car, security said, we need to get your grandparents into the building before you get out of the car. And that has to be, it's got one of the most surreal experiences in my life. People climbing on the car, you're trying to get out of the car, and then the bobbies are interlocking their arms on either side of you so you can go through them, so you can get through. So the idea of putting me in a costume, which later on, I don't know if I would do that again. The choice was for me to say yes to Canon saying, would you please wear it? Was I want to do anything I can to help this film, to help people, the photography, give them some photo ops. And that was my whole idea, is what can I do? What can I do? And so they asked, and I said, of course.
What was the weather like?
I don't remember it being anything unusual. I probably wouldn't have cared or noticed. I think I was so warm and so excited that it could have been snowing.
I was thinking if it was so cold.
I think it attracted some attention, I must say that.
Well, listen, I mean, to see you and standing there and seeing Princess Diana there, I mean, that's an iconic, there are people, you'll never have, people don't have that opportunity. People don't have a photo op like that. To see that's just unbelievable.
Yes. I was in a car in the back and being driven to different interviews, and the phone in the car rings, and I'm in the back, and the gentleman driving reaches, opens the little sliding door and goes, Mr. Pillow, sir, it's Buckingham Palace. Who gets the phone call? It's Buckingham Palace. And you pick it up, and it was Princess Diana's private secretary was saying the princess something to the effect of joining or being part of this thing and sitting with her at their open beer. But most unforgettable phone call of a lifetime. And then spending time, of course, sitting with her and getting a chance to, of course, that was the first time I'd seen the film, is sitting next to her. And of course, again, being English and standing up, and they're playing God Save the Queen, and I'm tearing up. I can feel it. I'm just going, because if anybody were to ask, what's it like to be on a film like this with Chris, being flown, Superman, iconic outfit, all that, do you know that you're in a special situation? Absolutely. There's not a day, there's not a moment you're going, this is very special. And just take in every single moment so you don't forget any experience. And that's exactly how it was. All through filming, the royal premiere, all that was, it's almost like this dream that you had, this sequence that passes by you. It was amazing.
Well, and then to see all of the visual effects finished, or where you're actually seeing yourself in space and you're flying over, you know, Moscow and doing all these different things. It's, you're hanging in front of wires for so long in front of a blue screen. You must have just been amazed with what they did with all of it too. You know,
and also thinking about how much time all that took. That was the time consuming part of that. And principal photography was probably finished Christmas, something like that. But we stayed and kept working on the flying shots. And I didn't know anything about the film. I don't think I knew that there was no Nuclear Man. What I didn't know about the final cut. So when I saw it, that was pretty much me getting an idea of what the film was. And I'm sure there was part of me going, what just happened?
You briefly talked about the training you had for flying, but what was it actually like being in the rig? I mean, did you believe a man could fly?
Yes. I mean, it's amazing to feel that sense. That sequence when we're at the Great Wall of China outside filming. I think that was around the coldest day that it had been in Britain in 50 years. I remember that, I think it was talk about trains freezing on the tracks. So when you're, and there was times because we had to come in from a high angle that 100 feet above the ground, and it was cold up there with that outfit on.
So what does your daughter think of you being a nuclear villain?
Like, what happened to the hair, Dad? Oh, I think they think it's all fun because they grew up around all that, and we were in LA for that's where they were both born, both my daughters. And to them, it's like, it's just Dad, I think. And I would imagine that Chris's kids felt the same about it. Oh, yeah, it's my dad.
We should talk a minute just about, and Martin, you really have done the most research on the 134-minute cut between the scripts, everything that Mark shot or we think he shot. Any questions for Mark in that sense?
Yeah, only in terms, I mean, the thing that would be really good to confirm is whether you remember shooting a sequence where, you know, that you spin the SWAT team bus around. Yes. At one point. Prior to that, in that same battle, in the Elstree sets in Metropolis, there's a whole sequence missing where you elevate yellow taxi cabs, and there's a few of them that all go up at the same time, and you drop them, and Superman has to catch one of them. Does that sound familiar?
Oh, wow. I hadn't thought about that in a long time. It does, but it's, again, I really almost don't have a recollection of that.
The thing about Nuclear Man is now, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but he's probably more popular and more of a cult character now than he ever was. He just seems to be getting more popular as the years go by. I can't explain it. I don't know what it is. People haven't seen the full story. And, you know, for somebody like yourself that was actually there, you know, it's so important for us on your behalf to get that cut out there. And that's what we're trying to do. Yeah.
I'm going to hope to see it happen. I might need a mullet wig, something like that. A few months in the gym. A bit of padding here and there. a bit of liposuction in other places.
Alexi, you wanted to ask about Clive, I think, didn't you?
Did you get to meet Clive Mantle as Nuclear Man 1? He seemed like a really genuine, nice person. And he was very sad that he was actually cut from the movie.
Yes, yes. And I hadn't spoken to him since all he was cut. We have a picture I have at home of a black and white, and I think he's shirtless for some reason, I believe. And I've got my outfit, we've got our arms around each other. And he's a big man, he's about like my size, and funny and incredible. And it's, you bring back these visions of these wonderful people to me, and I flash back to how great they were to spend time with. And if I could only know them a bit better, and would have expected him to have been at the premiere and where the film was. And heart-wrenching. I can certainly understand he was great, but maybe we still will see him, which I'm hoping for. It'd be wonderful. You'll forget about me.
I would love to see
that.
He's
up there like on Nuclear Man Who? Oh, yeah. Chopped liver over there. Hey!
He had good hair like you did. His was all spiked up.
He did a little spiky, yeah.
I don't know where he got
it. Mine's still spiky. It's just a lot shorter.
Destroyed.
Did you know when you were doing your lines that they would at some point use Gene, or did you find that out later? How did that work?
This, actually, I don't know how this all worked out, but this, the way it was done was extremely complicated. They recorded his voice first. So when you see me, it's like we're doing countdown, 3, 2, 1, and then try and sync my. So when you see a lot of Nuclear Man having this very wooden look on his face, well, partially it was because I'm trying to catch his lines because he'd done them already.
Destroy Superman.
So I knew actually during filming, and back then it didn't matter. It's whatever you want from me. If that's what your choice is for me to sign like Gene, when I'm taking that shot straight on at me, when I really look wooden and eyes are buggy because I'm genuinely listening, trying to match my mouth movement.
Destroy Superman now.
To Gene's playback of his voice.
Yeah.
Now, Mark, you have the part You know, you've got that. That's fine. But just for the sake of argument, can we hear you say destroy Superman now in your best nuclear man voice that you would have used?
Destroy Superman.
That's great.
See, that was exactly how I remember.
We can change it. We can go higher. We can go lower. We can go louder.
That was awesome.
Just keep rolling. I'll just keep trying. I'll keep throwing them at you.
Listen.
You'll have to switch me off. Throw something at me. Okay, that's enough.
We're getting you back into this series, Mark. That's our goal. Listen, we want to say before we wrap up today that we do have something really exciting, and this kind of happened when we got these costumes. Alexi reached out to you and said, "Hey, we've got a, you know, there's a couple of us that would really love to have you sign picture." And we have this loyal following. Can you know, people get a Mark Pillow autograph? So we have arranged it, Jim, through an extension of CapeWonder.com.
CapeWonderAutographs.com. And Mark, you are there and ready for the fans. And we've got some beautiful photographs on there. One of them courtesy of Alexi. Thank you so much, sir. We're just thrilled that you did those autographs for us already, Mark. So thank you.
You're very welcome.
We'll extend that to fans, and they'll go to Jim's website, CapeWonder.com. And
absolutely. I'd be thrilled too.
It's great.
I think I've got one last question, if that's okay.
Sure.
Were there any reshoots that you had to do that were quite memorable? Maybe something that kept going wrong, you had to keep filming it?
When I think of what had to be done over and over again were the flying shots. Is the angle not coming into the city at the right angle or leaving somewhere at the right angle against the blue screen? As I watched the film last night, I was watching me kind of wrestling with him, and I can see him just, and I thought, Mark, you should have just slowed down a little bit, you know, because you were moving a little bit too quick for him. But I think we did that scene quite a few times.
What's your most enduring memory and impression of Chris? For those of us that are never going to meet him, unfortunately, what was the man like? What was he like to spend time with? What was he like to know personally? What was he like on set? And what was he like to see play that role?
You know, I think all these different versions, you've got the time sitting when Stuart's putting his makeup on and Basil's doing mine, we're sitting side by side, soft-spoken, extremely intelligent, well-read, incredible voice. And then I think of him on the set, especially when he was directing on the moon, of just an incredible intensity of just we're going to get this, we're going to get it right, let's do it again, Mark. This way, that way, and you're just, I mean, he just took command of that. So watching him step into that persona and also seeing the quiet, soft-spoken, beautiful man when you're just having this nice, gentle conversation over lunch. So I think that whatever you think of him when you look back at him, he was every bit the man that you hope he would be and that you would imagine he would be, and you would dream he would be gentle, beautifully spoken, very kind, incredible to look at. Loved his family. I mean, just loved the part. I think he slipped into that outfit, into his costume, and he just became Superman. There's just no doubt about it to watch him there, to stand there. And I'll never forget it. Just incredible. The first time I saw him in that costume, my gosh. Memorable.
Well, I knew Chris for the last decade of his life, Mark, and that's exactly the impression I had. Obviously, I never worked with him on a film set, but I did see the quiet side, sort of the Clark Kent side of him. And then, you know, when it was time to turn it on, and we had him at a show, he had to do a Q&A, so he hosted his own. And I saw him sort of prepare backstage, getting ready, concentrating. He was quiet, kind of thinking very deeply. Yes. And when it was time to come out on stage, he just all lit up. But he loved talking about the filming of these movies, and I think he was so grateful for the experience and being able to work under so many different directors and the visual effects people he just loved and appreciated so much. But thank you, and I'll always thank Chris and everybody else associated with these films.
I am truly honored that you've asked me. I've had such a wonderful time and wonderful meeting you virtually, but I hope someday we can meet in person.
The great Mark Pillow, such an honor and pleasure to have you on. We really, really appreciated it. And we'll hope to talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Mark. Be safe.
Thanks, Mark. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Mark. Awesome. Hi, guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
Wonderful to meet you.
Great having those guys on, and a late night for them in the UK, but really excited to not only Jim interview Mark Pillow for us, but it was great to hear their excitement.
No, definitely. I mean, they were young kids when it came out, and geez, if I was excited about Four, can you imagine how they felt? And it was great to talk to Alexi for the very first time today. Known him a long time, and he and Martin are really great guys over there. They just exude so much enthusiasm and excitement. We love it.
They're the us of the UK.
Pretty much.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back with episode 35 very, very soon. You can catch all of our episodes, of course, on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you listen to podcasts, and we certainly appreciate it. CapedWonderAutographs.com is how you get a fantastic Mark Pillow personalized autograph photo for a very limited time this month of April. Go to CapedWonderAutographs.com. That is all for us, and thank you so much for listening. And as always, Jim,
stay super.
You've been listening to the Caped Wonder Superman podcast on the iHeartRadio app. Jay Towers is a Detroit TV anchor and morning radio host on 100.3 WNIC Detroit. Follow Jay on Instagram and Twitter at Jay Towers. Jim Bowers is the founder and editor of CapedWonder.com, the home of Caped Wonder Superman imagery. Follow Jim on Instagram at Caped Wonder and on Twitter at Caped Wonder Jim.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.